Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland. You've got Corey Majors. You have the famous Mike Bassick. And Mike, should I put you to the test?
Heck yeah, you can.
Okay, who is our board op today?
Looks like a Peter to me.
His name is not Peter. Would you like to take
Were you
one
suggesting
more
guess? Like he physically looks like a Peter? Is that what you're saying? Or like his
Yeah, like okay. Pete, but you go by Pete, right?
Nope.
Steven?
Nope.
I mean, I think he's in the general vicinity of like pretty common names.
This is fair. I'm gonna be honest. I don't know if we should say the name until he gets it right.
Mm. Oh my good lord.
That's right. This could be a long shot. I know.
This is drive me insane.
We should not say his
only
name.
Only one more time. I'll guess one more time right now. Okay. Larry.
We have a Larry.
A different guy.
It's
completely different person.
James. All right. Brother James. Here we go.
Happy to be here, boys.
Thank you for being here.
I like that name. Do you go by Jim?
Oh my gosh.
We can go Jim.
Jimmy.
Sometimes Jim, right?
Yeah.
That's true, but like you just learned his name 5 seconds ago, and now you're like, what else can I call you?
Yeah, it used to be Mr. James Pizza, but people forgot, so they said Mr. Jim's.
Okay, let's talk about the Cowboys game. What I want to know, good Lord, from a variety of people is, because Corey, I'm gonna admit it, I fell into the trap when they were making the comeback, when the 49ers at least once, and then the other time their defenders ran into each other, decided not to guard CeeDee Lamb in the end zone. I believed that the Cowboys were going to come back and win. Did you stick with the game all the way through? Did people have to jump back into the game? And did y'all believe 877-881-1053 the Cowboys were going to come back and win? I did. Clearly wrong.
I stopped taking notes in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
So, my notes end. The Dallas Cowboys got a possession and the score was 27-10. And I stopped taking notes at that point. Because I was like, it's just too much. You pointed out the stats last week. To start games and start halves, the Cowboys are bad. 7 times now, they have not scored on the first drive and let the other team score on the first drive. And then when you come back from halves, they just let them score all the time anyway. And you heard Collinsworth say, it could get out of hand real quick. The Cowboys can't let this get away. And all of a sudden, it was too much.
By the way, that's 10-0 for San Francisco in this game on first drives of the game and first drives of the half. I believe the Cowboys have now been outscored 71-15 on that front and given up points in 13 of those 14 drives. We might do more of a deep dive into that tomorrow, but that's astonishing.
Dak is in a terrible place right now. And when I say terrible place, I'm not just saying he's playing bad, because Mike just pointed out there was a section of time where he played exceptional. Like, you couldn't play better than Dak did at that moment. But he is in such a bad place because the offensive line's bad.
Yep.
He has a receiver to throw to, and then a bunch of other people who might be fifth receivers on other teams that are acting like seconds.
At the end of the game, Chris Collinsworth pointed out he can't move anymore.
No, he's
closer to 40 years. His body's closer to 40 years old than it is 30 years
old. Yeah, watch Aaron Rodgers play right now, and then watch Dak play and go, oh, okay, I see. Aaron Rodgers... I saw a line that said he can't play the way he wants to play, and that's bad whenever you're at that position, because athletes, Mike, you've talked about this, you know. You're like, my brain knows all these things, but my body cannot do the things that I want it to do. So I'm not blaming Dak completely on this, because he's in a terrible place because of what's surrounding him, and he's not playing well, and he needs other people surrounding him to play better. And then the defensive side of the ball isn't playing exceptional either. They had a different plan last night. They were like, let's just put everybody up at the front and just hope that we can stop the run.
And in the first half, it was kind of, I want to say it was kind of working. It was very confusing. You know, like a lot of people will tell you, like, watch the damn game. Other people will tell you, you can read into the box score and it'll tell you the story of the game. In the first half, The Cowboys were giving up 8 yards per play and still had only given up 6 points. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
And Shanahan said at halftime that he was glad that they got the ball to start the second half because he knew what his mistakes were, and it was his team. It was the guys that weren't executing the catches, the guys that weren't executing some small things here and there and some penalties that got them. They went into that locker room, and he knew exactly what to pinpoint and say, we fix this, we win this game. Yeah. And then they came out, and his game calling was even better, and his players executed even better. I thought that Mason going down was actually hugely beneficial because I think that Kittle, at that point, they were like, we got to turn to him more now. I think if Mason would have been healthy.
Hugely beneficial for
San Francisco.
Niners.
Yeah, okay. Because I think that if Mason would have stayed in the game, they would have continued to try to run the way that they were, and they weren't as successful. But then they said, you know what, we're going to turn this over to the other people. And they did, and they were very good. I watched the whole thing.
I did too.
And down to the last second, and I was so excited whenever that last play happened so I could go to bed.
From the... Man, from the 682, they need to go no huddle sooner rather than when from trailing. Now, look, it's the same thing with the Baltimore game. I understand what the argument's going to be. In the Baltimore game, just like last night, you got the ball back and you actually did have a chance to go and win the game. Now, how you got to that point, I think it is debatable about like it was just awesome, no huddle, move the ball, football versus it was a little bit of that versus... we're going to win the game. So let's ease back on defense. I know some people argue against that. That's what I saw in the Ravens game. That's what I saw in the 49ers game. That helped the Cowboys at least partially make their comeback into this game.
I'm with you on that. I will give the Cowboys credit, though, as much as I know everybody believes it's the coaching staff and not the players, or at least it feels like it off of social media that...
It's at least kind of the players.
And I think that there's a part of it that's the coaching staff, but then I guess they drew up two awesome plays, right? Because they had 49ers running into each other.
Yes,
and
they did.
You know, CeeDee Lamb, their best receiver, getting open by...
Wide open.
Right, and so you got two touchdowns off of those plays. I am just amazed, and my buddy texted me when we were doing crosstalk, and I am amazed by this, is Dak is able to drive your team down the field so easily two times in a row when it is a 17-point game or a 20-point game, whatever it was. And then when you get the ball back with 3 minutes to go to win the game, you do have to go down and score a touchdown. You have all the time in the world. You have a two-minute timeout.
Warning, yeah.
3 minutes is all the time in the world to do it. And then he turns back into like the third quarter Dak or the first half Dak. It was amazing to me, and I guess I just thought that he could carry the momentum of the last two drives for two touchdowns into that last, and then all of a sudden it's like, I can't do anything, I can't move, I can't read defenses anymore. And that is amazing to me, is all you have to do, and this is too general because he did win against Pittsburgh, all you have to do is put the pressure on Dak that the game is on the line and he turns into a bad quarterback.
They are also coached poorly. You saw it in
There's
this
plenty
game.
Of blame to go around, I agree.
You saw it in this game as much as I think you've ever seen, and that is, we'll get to this in C Block later on today, but I'll go ahead and say it now because it's 4 hours from now, Kevin.
That's true.
Three maybe, I don't know. Four penalties on kickoff and kick return.
Yeah.
How the hell do you have a illegal formation on the opening kick return of a game? Who does that?
Yeah. When they had 3 minutes to set up because they're like, we should be starting this game. The refs aren't starting it. The TV is ready. They're having... So at some point, don't you think during those 2 minutes of just standing there and waiting, the guy next to the guy in the illegal formation say, hey, scoot up or scoot back or something. Like,
and then you
help
then you
them out.
Illegal formation on the other side, the same way. And you had 2 weeks to get prepared for this moment. And you're like, we don't know how to do it. And then, Kevin, right before halftime, you got a minute and 31 seconds left on the clock.
And 21 seconds?
Something like that. You're down, or you're up 10-6. They give you the ball back.
Yeah.
And you have a chance to, I don't know, run the clock out. You use 20 seconds. You use less than 30 seconds, and you gave them the ball back. Now, fortunately, you had a pass incomplete, sack incomplete, and it ended the half. But, man, you couldn't have run the clock out better than that or moved the ball. You said, hey, let's just throw the ball 3 times and get out of here real quick, guys. That's bad coach. That's bad play calling. That's bad understanding of what's supposed to be going on in the game.
So there's a couple of things that I want to throw out. First of all, and I see it, it's all, you always see it across social media. We see it on the fan text and everything. I just want to give a friendly reminder for everyone who is mad about the four-year, $240 million extension. Please remember, for Dak, that doesn't even start until next year.
Yeah, so don't worry about it this
year. So if you're worried about the money now...
Don't worry about it now.
His cap hit this year is $43.3 million. His cap hit next year is $89.9 million.
That's now, down the road,
we'll
Kevin.
Push it down.
Yeah, exactly. Because I know that's what Jerry and Steven... Jerry has literally told us before, there's a mechanism in that contract. Okay, here's what happens. You kind of think about it as like a minimum payment sort of thing. You're like, I'm at a minimum payment, except this isn't a never-ending credit card. It's a credit card that has a pretty definitive end date, and that's where you get stuck with the bill. And so if you're mad about the contract, just realize it hasn't even actually started yet. The other thing.
Yeah, don't be mad about it now is what you're saying.
Oh, no, you just
be mad about it
later.
Be
prepared to be madder, I guess. I don't know. But here's the thing that you brought up that I think is the most frustrating to me. There was a lot of time in the first half where this felt like another Pittsburgh-esque, physical, ugly, grinded out game. And at halftime, I know it fell apart very quickly in the third quarter. You were in it. And then when you made the comeback, I was like, are they going to walk away from a second road game against a team that I believe is more physical than them, and they're going to out-tough them, out-ugly them, and win the game? I think that's what really makes me upset, too, because I really believed, hey, they got a shot to pull up another one of these. I'm not saying the Cowboys are the toughest team in the league, but this would have been two. This would have been two where I was like, you had a team that I thought was tougher than you, and you went out there and you punched back.
Yeah, and you didn't have enough punches.
True.
You didn't. You simply did not have enough punches for that thing. And Kevin, if they were the type of team that comes back and wins those kinds of games, the Robo 2014 team, I don't know, the one that lost, that Dez caught it.
Yes, 2014.
That was a team that year, there were seven at least comeback wins that they would march down the field, they wouldn't die, and they'd come back and win, which is why I believed that year. In that game, Mike, I know Aaron Rodgers could have had the ball game, but I believe that year was the year because they just kept coming back. Unfortunately, that was a force that was beyond their control that ruined that game for them. But this year, if you're going to be that kind of team, I can accept the slow starts. I can accept the way that things go through the first two quarters, and then maybe you turn it on in the fourth quarter. But you're not a team that finishes things like that at the end of the game. You're not finishing that way. So I don't understand, A, your slow starts, and then B, your failures at the end of the game.
It's
you guys upset?
No. I think I am upset all over again, and I didn't think I was going to be, but some of the points y'all are making is making me upset all over again. But Corey, you just said no, and like very matter of fact.
This team is exactly what it is. And we knew before the season that their talent wasn't good enough.
Yep.
And that they were gonna have a lot of obstacles to overcome this year. A, because of the position that the GM put them in with the talent, the age that they're starting to get to, and the fact that their coach may be on his way out at some point. We knew these factors were in there, and at some point they would happen. And right now, with the offensive line being what it is and capable of keeping Dak without in a clean pocket through most of the game, and the lack of talent in your offense, and even missing Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence, you are exactly what you are right now, a team that is 3-4.
I'm going to go back to this time and again, and if people get tired of hearing it, I do apologize. But to me, this is why the Cowboys don't win, like at that next level, because I know they've won 36 regular season games in the last 3 years. I understand that. This is why they don't win at the next level. They like to tell us about their hit rate in the draft and how incredible it is because of those second contracts. I just want to remind everybody, if you want to walk out of the Terrence Steele contract, he has an $18 million cap hit next year. $18 million.
And that's all it's going to cost to get rid of him?
No, actually, you could get out of it for only 13 and a half if you wanted. But like the way the Cowboys do business, it's 18 the next year, 21 the next year.
You sound like you're giving up on this season because you're talking about the future contracts of players.
The next five games are terrifying for this team. After
Mike is coming back.
You had 2 weeks to prepare for the Niners, and you were able to put 10 points up in the first half. with 2 weeks to prepare for it. And that's the effort that you get. So, yeah, looking at the next five games, I'm terrified of what this team could possibly look like.
And we could talk about it more as the day goes along. We can talk about it more as the week goes along. I'm not giving up on the team, but I'm also wondering at what point do you look at it and you're like, the team might just not be good enough. Like, they might be giving you everything they have, and it's a lack of, like, overall talent or a lack of scheme management or a lack of clock management or a lack of cap management. It could be a lack of whatever the hell you think it is. You might get to the point where they're just not good enough. And yesterday kind of felt like one of those games. And I hate to say it, my frustration level still remains with the way the Cowboys have and continue to do the cap. And when they talk about, oh, we hit on our draft picks, Terrence Steele's a draft pick hit. Because they gave him a second contract. And he's had his moments. Absolutely. He's had his moments. And I know people will be like, oh, he's undrafted. But you understand what I'm saying. But they gave him a second contract. And so he counts as a hit. Does he feel like a hit right now?
Mm-mm.
Exactly. And so you can't get out of it, or the Cowboys won't get out of it, because that's just not what they do. With the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, obviously, we could talk some more Cowboys, whatever's on your mind there, but also the crazy day for the Detroit Lions, and my goodness, that Hail Mary. Let's do it next right here on The Fan.
They're going to quarterback sneak straight ahead. Purdy appears to have been, touchdown.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan on a Cowboys Monday. We're going to get to maybe the Lions, maybe that ridiculous Hail Mary that actually was also kind of awesome. But sticking with the Cowboys, there's one specific play that I think caught all of our attention. I know it caught Chris Collinsworth's attention, because once they picked the flag up, he goes, oh, well, that feels like there's about to be a lot of acting and they're about to change a lot of offenses. Were you surprised that essentially the pick play that was called as pass interference, they ended up picking up the flag on?
Yes. I still don't quite understand why they picked it up, because my understanding now is, okay, I can just grab I can basically get grabbed and grab onto the other cornerback in front of me, and then I can then go block the guy in the pick
play.
Like, I understand a rub play, I understand picks and everything. That was a complete block, though. He tackled the guy. So, and it was because of the way the route was built. So, that doesn't make any sense to me why they went ahead and picked that one back up, especially when Mike, you said two flags were thrown.
Yeah, both refs that were kind of watching it are like, yeah, that's, he totally eliminates the guy covering Kittle, but I don't know how you review that, as in you talk about it, go, no, the receiver didn't do anything wrong. I don't see how, if that's not a pick play, then what is a pick play?
Yeah, what did you see live that made you throw the ball in the flag and then change? What did you see? What did y'all discuss after that made you change your mind? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I just look. Would the Cowboys have won the game if they call that pass interference? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that is really weird that that is a legal play, because you're supposed to disguise the pick. You're supposed to, like, at the last second, get out of the guy's way a little bit so you don't just literally block him. That was if it was a run play, you'd be like, that is a great block by the receiver. If you're running a sweep to the right side, like, what a great play.
Mm-hmm. So quick question for you guys, and maybe you'll think this is an unfair characterization. Do you think sometimes they ever just wait to bring in the rules expert until after everything has been settled so they can agree with what the league announced? Because I'm not going to lie, there are many times where I think they're like, the rules expert will come in after the fact and be like, here's why it was right. Well, not, oh, I don't know about
and
that.
And even Steratore was like, well, I'll get back to you after the break here. You know, he's yes, sometimes they're like, hey, I'm going to give my opinion here, but let's see what they say. And so, yeah, the rules expert being part of it, Kevin, really has not helped me at all. Other than once they've done it, they'll explain a little more of something. But even that part of it, they didn't explain that very well at all.
No.
Because
they were saying cornerback tried to go inside and run into the receiver to get the penalty. Like, he's trying to draw a penalty instead of play defense.
He's supposed to go around it. I don't understand exactly what the coverage is supposed to do there. But if you're saying that it's not illegal contact because it wasn't any further than 5 yards, like, okay, I guess. I don't know. But it looked like a bad call.
All right, there was plenty of other stuff happening in the NFL yesterday.
And the Cowboys did plenty of other things to screw themselves over.
Oh, my God.
So, like, I don't want to be like, oh, this is... No, there were so many other poor things done. That one in particular felt like that was a poor play by the refs.
Yeah, absolutely. That is just a thing we're discussing, not a reason why they lost the game or anything. A lot of stuff happened in the NFL. The shocking Baltimore loss to Cleveland, though, at this point, I mean, it feels like we get one of those every single weekend. But... let's go to the Commanders, because they look like they were going to win the game most of the day. Then all of a sudden, the Bears put on the surge, take the lead with 23, 24 seconds left, and then it's over. They're going to lose, but then Jaden Daniels finds a former Cowboy to get this done.
Here comes the Hail Mary with the game on the line, and the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Noah Brown! Oh my goodness! This town is going crazy!
Was that your reaction? Because I get conflicted between, if you see an amazing play, you almost automatically celebrate it, but then you're like, well, that's not the team that I wanted to win. Like, obviously, I want our divisional
team. Oh, that was the team I wanted to win.
Okay. Why is that?
Because I'm hoping that Washington, over these next 5 to 10 years, turns it around, perennial playoff team, makes it to a Super
Bowl. You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
So you can see that Daniel Snyder was the whole issue. This unbelievable football franchise that had this historic franchise that you couldn't get tickets to goes into the dumps of all dumps for multiple decades because of the owner. And then the owner has to sell the team. He has to get rid of the team. And then they almost immediately turn it around into a playoff team and then become a perennial contender. I just think that would be an awesome storyline for Cowboy fans.
You were there in DC when that all happened too.
Yeah.
Like you saw their fans experience just the doldrums of it all.
Yeah.
And so,
how they just left. They just stopped showing up. They just said, I'm tired of it. I'm not showing up anymore. I'm not supporting it anymore. Now, Jerry's lucky. It's never got to that. And Jerry has probably never been as bad as Daniel Snyder.
Right.
But, like, there's this feeling for the first time, possibly. I know this is getting back into Cowboys talk instead of around the NFL.
No, that's fine.
It does start to feel like more people are turning into me than ever before, where it's like, look, I watch it still, but I'm not paying a dime for a jersey or a hat or going to a game. Or if my kid wants to go out and take batting practice at 8 o'clock last night, I'm going to throw him batting practice. Yeah. I am going to spend time with my family. I have it. It's recorded. It's good to go. And I didn't do that. I did watch the game live last night every second, but I'm not going to waste a second of my life on the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay. It's interesting that you say that, because last night at 30-10, and people are mentioning us on social media being like, is it about to get a lot worse? And I know that was the concern. I was thinking, if it gets worse, do I watch the rest of the game later, fast forward it, and catch up on, like, From? I know it's kind of an obscure show. If you've ever seen it, it's on MGM+. It's really, really good. But I was already thinking, like, is there something else maybe we'll do with the rest of our time? I'm glad I stuck it out, because obviously the Cowboys came back, but not all the way. But I was very entertained the rest of the way. But I was thinking in my head, if it's time to bail, what are we going to do instead?
Yeah. And Kevin, I asked this question on Facebook on the 105.3 The Fan Club Tolo page. I said, for all Cowboys fans who are thinking about jumping ship, I feel you. I do. I understand. I'm feeling that right now. And then I said, for those who are finding a life vest, why? Like, if you're not jumping off this ship, if you're going down with it, and there are lots of different answers about being a loyal fan and how, if you're a loyal fan, you have to stick with the team no matter what and all those things. There's a lot of different conversation there. So if you want to go check that out on the Club Tolo page, go ahead and do that. As for the Hail Mary pass, the time, he had 13 seconds 12, to make that, yeah.
12.74 seconds.
He did do a good job of creating that
yes,
time.
And that's what he does well. He has one of the best deep ball throwers right now in the game. Just look at what he does with Terry McLaurin. And Terry McLaurin, by the way, 5 for 125 yesterday. He's a good receiver. But he also gets a fantastic block to knock the guy down so he can set his feet, puts the ball up in the air, and it bounces off the front people, and there's somebody in Noah Brown in the back. It was magic, man. It was a terrible game for the most part.
Oh, my God. It was the worst.
I actually, this is one of those games, though, that I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not watching Red Zone to watch all the other stuff and this at the same time. I'm going to focus on this one. Caleb Williams was wildly inaccurate, couldn't find a receiver downfield, had to scramble for his life the entire game. Jaden Daniels, all that Romo wanted to discuss was, hey, it's the ribs. You got to, and you were in the same boat as a watcher. You were like, oh my gosh, every time he takes off, his ribs. And then he's like, no, I'm fine. I know how to do this. I know exactly how to run. He ran a read option to start the game. What are you doing there? And they couldn't run the ball effectively. They struggled to run the ball, but they were putting the ball downfield. They stayed just close enough. When the DeAndre Swift 56-yard touchdown happened, I was like, wow, that's how they win this game. And then, hold on, I know Jaden Daniels can throw. I know he can put a ball in the air. And then it happened that way. It was special. And there's some magic right now in Washington.
I understand playing back to a certain extent if you're the Bears. But the play before the Hail Mary, I think there's 6 seconds to go.
Oh, it was brilliant by Cliff Kingsbury, the calls that he made on those plays.
It was really weird that the Bears are like, I will absolutely give up the 12 to 15 yards and the sideline that will facilitate you getting out of bounds and getting into position for a Hail Mary. Because otherwise, Jaden Daniels, I'm not saying he didn't have a huge arm, but he would have had to throw the ball 70 yards in the air. Mm-hmm. And it was weird to me the way the Bears are just like, that's fine.
Yeah,
knock yourself up.
They got stuff. They got screens underneath, too. It was really good play calling by Kingsbury, who knew he probably, in his mind, he's probably gone over that thousands of times.
I can see that.
Of here's how I'm going to do this if I'm going to do this in a minute and a half.
Ari used to be on the pre and post game show here. He's down the hall. I think he does college football stuff here.
Great dude.
Okay, great dude. And he's a Bears fan. And I'll throw this out at you because I said, look, it was awesome as a football fan. I get as a Bears fan, it's miserable.
Yep.
The worst. Like, can you imagine if that was the Cowboys against Washington and you're fighting for a playoff spot with kind of those teams? Is if you let them snap the ball there, same players, you can do different defenses, whatever, 100 times. How many times does that get completed? I said twice out of 100. Like, you
could see that. Like,
if you were at practice and you allowed Washington to have that play and the same defenders are out there for Chicago. I mean, it's in a way pure luck. You had to do certain things to get the luck to go up or your percentage to go up to, like, I don't know, 5%.
Yeah.
But it was unfortunate that the 1 out of 100 or 3 out of 100 times actually happened on the real play.
And I know some people are blaming, and I totally understand why, Tyreek Stevenson. So the social media now, Corey, you cracked a smile. I assume you have seen this video.
He's on today's misses.
The social media video of him, like, dancing around and hyping up the crowd and everything,
and
like that.
And then the play starts and he's still turned around the wrong way.
So,
and he's the, oh, I'm sorry, you're probably about to say this, he's the guy that tipped the ball to Noah Brown.
Always knock it down.
He's the one that did it.
Never tip it up.
It's just a bad look.
So he tweeted out to Chicago and my teammates, my apologies for lack of awareness and focus. The game ain't over until zeros hit the clock. It's Can't true. Take anything for granted. Notes taken. Improvement will happen.
Just ask Freddie Freeman.
So I at least appreciate him stepping out and being like, holy crap, that was stupid. And I don't know if he still had his pads on when he tweeted that out.
Are you saying that he sometimes didn't, that happens. After the game was over, he didn't search out tweets and then go talk to the people who tweeted about it?
I guess not. I didn't. Yeah, look, that's a whole other thing we'll get into. I didn't time check when that message came out, but I appreciate him taking some of the blame for that. But we probably don't really have time to dive in on the Lions yesterday, but I just want you to think about
this.
We'll
get to them. We'll get
to them.
Makes
the Cowboys loss not feel as bad, I guess.
Dude, that was it for NFL fans. Yesterday was a really fun day.
It was.
There was some really exciting things that happened yesterday.
If you have a particular rooting interest, it might have been a soul-crushing day. But, you know, if you're just a general fan of football, there you go. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bacsik.
What a series. And can it happen again tonight? Next.
Cortez delivers.
Masterpiece back here on 105 through the Fan. It is a Cowboys Monday, but it is also World Series time, so it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bacsik.
I'm sure that moment feels like a long time ago if you're a sports fan, because you had Saturday college football, you had Saturday night World Series game, and then you had all of Sunday football for the NFL. That, I don't want to overstate it. That's one of the five greatest World Series games in the history of the World Series. Now, what's tough is it wasn't a game seven, or it wasn't a deciding game where, like, Joe Carter's home run against Mitch Williams in 1991 or 92.
I think 92 or 93.
So I get it. You know, I get that that wasn't a walk-off home run to win the World Series, but my gosh, that was such an amazing game. And then to end it on, I didn't know this, the first ever walk-off grand slam in World Series history. All the thousands of games they've played in the World Series, that's the first time ever a grand slam has walked it off, was amazing.
So here's where I'm struggling. I'm not disagreeing with your point whatsoever, but to me, the problem I have is separating, like, objectiveness from fandom, because I'm like, yeah, it still doesn't compare to last year's game one. But that's because that was the greatest baseball game I've probably ever seen in my life for a selfish reason.
Right.
So it was,
and that was my son telling me that wasn't better than last year's game one.
And, like,
and I was like, maybe you're right, but the back and forth, the Yankees, Dodgers.
I can't be objective about it. I'm saying you're probably right, but I can't be objective. That ending was incredible, because immediately when Freeman walks up, you're like, oh, could this kind of be a Kirk Gibson situation? I know he had broken off a triple already, so it's not like exactly the same.
I think he had the triple in game two.
Oh, he didn't have the triple in game one?
I'd have to go back and look, but I thought. I'm wrong. I'm sorry if I'm getting that wrong. They're running a little bit together. I guess they shouldn't. But I just remember, in that situation,
it wasn't game one.
Okay, game one was a triple.
I'm not saying he's not banged up, but it wasn't like Kirk Gibson looked like he legitimately, like, barely could
walk. Yeah, which will be interesting. I watched the post-game show after game two, and they were about ready to get on the plane, right? I mean, obviously they have to do a lot of post-game after World Series, so the plane's going to leave probably an hour later than it usually does if you're going to New York after a, you know, West Coast game. Yeah. But it'll be interesting tonight to see. Freddie Freeman has said getting on planes has really given me issues, because his ankle swells up tremendously. If you hear people that say, hey, when they get on planes and obviously, like, you can swell up a little bit, I guess he's saying the travel of the flights has really bugged his ankle. So obviously they had off yesterday. They play tonight. It's in New York. I'm going to start off by saying this. I do not think this series is over. I do not think that the Dodgers have this thing wrapped up. I know I'm going to go back in history here, but in 1996, I will say that the Braves were way better than the Yankees.
And
to this day, the Braves have more talent than that 96 Yankees team. But all of a sudden, there was just a little bit of a momentum shift, and the Braves couldn't overcome it. I think being up 2-0 is great for the Dodgers, and ultimately I'm rooting for the Dodgers. It won't hurt my feelings if the Yankees win this World Series, but I don't think this series is over because it's 2-0 LA.
Baseball need might be a strong word. Baseball would very, very, very much like the Yankees to win tonight, because we talked about it. Game one and two, highest ratings in the World Series in 7 years.
Can you help me out? Is that the Cubs one?
That was the year before. So it was...
What's the 7 years ago?
Dodgers and Astros,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
But so Choppy said, I don't necessarily agree with this, but if you can get to game seven, he thinks they can touch 40 million. All right. So right now they're at 15 or 16 million. I think more like 30 plus million. But that's still a lot of damn people. That's twice as many people as watch game one and two. So Major League Baseball very much would like, hey, Yankees, if you could win this and keep pushing it forward.
There was so much just to talk about in game one. Obviously, we brought it up in crosstalk. Gerrit Cole, the reason you gave him nine figures and well over nine figures was for this moment. If you had him healthy in this moment, he can pitch you to something special. But I won't. Analytics is such a dirty word. Analytics are needed. Analytics are very useful. But you don't want to just totally rely on them. And that's where I would have said this.
They help you identify trends and create plans against or with the trends.
Maybe I'm wrong. I think Bruce Bochy leaves Gerrit Cole in because he's going a little bit more by gut. Like, this is my guy. He's the best. I do have a good bullpen. But why would I take him out with what he has going? And then I will say this. For Aaron Boone, this is the first time. I think he's a great manager, by the way. This is the first time he's managed in the World Series.
Okay, yeah.
And so maybe Bruce Bochy, with his experience, has said, oh, I've had this before. I can ride Mad Bum. And I'm now going to ride Gerrit Cole. And so I look at it and I go, I think Aaron Boone just got a little bit too much. This can happen. And the thing is we don't know if he would have left in Gerrit Cole. Maybe he gives up a couple runs and then everybody's like, why would you do this all year? You've done this. And if he gets to 90 something pitches, you know this. And I don't know all the stats. So when he gets to pitch 90 through 110 versus, you know.
Help me out real quick. Did he give up the single in the seventh and then they pulled him?
I believe so.
Okay, because then you just assume they're like, hey.
This is the tough thing about being a Friday game.
Because you've already seen the whole other game.
I'm starting to it starts to all mesh together, the middle part. Obviously, I can remember the Freddie Freeman home run.
Yes.
And I can remember the final moments of the game, but the middle part of the game, sometimes I'm getting a little bit lost.
Because I'm assuming they kind of went out there with the deal of, hey, if you give up a base runner, we're probably going to pull you.
Yeah.
And when the leadoff guy got a single, I think that was the deal. I also would have left him in because the inning before, he put down Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman. Yep. Boom, boom, boom. So
I like this from Alex Rodriguez on the postgame. He said, Buck Showalter said this about taking a pitcher out in certain situations. Is the other team happy you're taking out that pitcher, or are they sad you're taking out that pitcher? And he said sometimes he would go off of that decision. Now, there's analytics would say you never go off of that. You never go off of what you think the other team is thinking. Yeah. But, you know, I go back to the 2020 World Series and Mookie Betts is on deck and they take out Blake Snell and they're like, what did you, and this was the game winning game. And he said, I was so pumped that they took him out and I got to face a righty that I felt more comfortable against. And Alex Rodriguez was saying the Dodgers were happy they took out Gerrit Cole.
I agree with you.
And so it was like, great, we get to see somebody worse than Gerrit Cole. It gives us a better chance. And so I think sometimes I thought that was pretty good by A-Rod to say hey, as a manager, is the other team happy I'm taking out this guy because now they feel like they have a better chance? Or are they like, dang it, I wanted one more at bat against this guy because I don't think he has anything left. And so I thought that was a really good assessment of the time. The other thing that came into play is you brought in a starting pitcher in the biggest situation and you had a lefty in the bullpen that's a sidearm lefty that is a relief pitcher. That was another interesting situation by Aaron Boone in game one. Because game two, it actually came down to the end. But it wasn't like the Yankees had the lead. They were trying to come back to tie the game or have a somewhat miracle comeback in the ninth inning off of a tired relief pitcher in Blake Treinen. Or Treinen. I always get his name wrong. I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong. But I just looked at that game one as right now the Yankees are down in this series 2-0 because of game one. And you don't know if they leave in Gerrit Cole, they win the game.
Sure.
Or if they put in this lefty reliever, he keeps the game where it's at and you keep playing the game. I don't know. I know that Ohtani first pitch swinging, I believe Cortez, if I have this right, if you have it pulled up, I think he only threw two pitches because Ohtani, I think, swung at the first pitch too, and Alex Verdugo made an unbelievable
catch.
Play that obviously gets lost because then you intentionally walk Mookie Betts. Freeman hits the home run.
That was the first pitch.
So two pitches. So Cortez came in, I guess you could say faced three hitters, but it's an intentional walk, and you don't throw the four balls anymore. But anyways, that was such an unbelievable game, and I know I only have a minute here. Maybe I get into baseball a little bit more into Mike likes it. I'm not sure Ohtani can swing a bat tonight.
Because Dave Roberts is like, he's good to go.
And maybe he is. And Dave has been honest guy in these interviews. Like, it's Dave Roberts is a gem for media as like, hey, we're going to interview him live in the fourth inning. What's going on? And he's like, well, Walker Buehler, I'm trying to get three more outs of him here. He's only going to face three more batters. Like, he's just giving you what he's going to do. There's nothing a hitter can do. It's not like you're telling the player, like, we're going to run the ball here off the left guard. Like, you're not doing that. He's not saying the pitches he's going to throw.
He's throwing three fastballs and change
up. Hey, shut up.
But sometimes people think it's so secretive. And it's like, look, pretty much everybody knows we're bunting here. If this is a bunt situation, we just have to execute the bunt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been really fun so far. I'm hoping tonight is a great game. But I'm just with Shohei Ohtani. He got on a plane. I guess they had a workout yesterday because he had to do media, so he had a light workout. How hard did he swing the bat? Because if your shoulder pops out, which it kind of did on that slide, and then you pop it back in, isn't it a little bit loose? Like, you understand what I'm saying?
I would assume.
I'm going to just explain it this way. The cup that's holding in your shoulder, it's now lost that. The socket came out, and now you're putting it back in. Isn't it a little bit like it's going to be loose? It's going to maybe easily pop out again. And if he swings and misses, a lot of times we'll say when you have injury, swinging and missing hurts a lot more than in making contact with the ball. So I'm going to be interested in Ohtani's first at bat if he does have a couple of swings where he looks like he's swinging the bat hard. Now, it is his left hand. It's his top hand on the bat. I don't know. When you make contact, do you kind of release that hand a little bit now? Like, I don't know, to maybe take a little bit of pressure off of that? And I would say this.
Hold on.
I wouldn't expect him to steal.
Hold on. How in the world, after what you did last week, did you not say, do you take your hand off the bat a little bit to take a load off? How do you not say that in that moment?
Know. He's doing real serious baseball talk
I'm serious
right now, Kevin.
Right now.
Come on, man.
We take a load off at 12:45.
Yeah, dude, you know the rules.
Yeah, don't worry. I still have it pulled up.
That being said, Mel Gibson, you know, he was able to pop his shoulder back in and get back out there.
Well, and then the last thing I'll leave you with is maybe I'll talk about this at 12:45, like it or not. I love the classic jerseys in this series.
Yeah.
I love that there's no goofballing it up.
Okay.
Like A&M.
I was about to ask you about that. I was wondering if you thought A&M with the black jerseys.
Good for A&M. We'll talk about it, I guess, tomorrow. That just looks stupid to me.
They wouldn't have won.
I'm glad they won, but what a stupid look.
Okay, we'll talk about that in just a minute because we're going to talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo, but also A&M, LSU, and the national arrival of Marcel Reed next on The Fan.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app